Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. U.S. President Joe Biden's American Jobs Plan includes $111 billion to solve drinking water problems throughout the United States, including long-standing problems in our Native nations. That sounds promising, but it's uncertain whether or not Congress will approve it. Coming up, we'll talk with water advocates about what it's going to take to build sustainable and reliable infrastructure for clean drinking water. Join us after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indian Health Service facilities last week began vaccinating ages 12 and up with the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, following FDA approval to include adolescents 12 to 15 years old and the approval of the Advisory Council on Immunization Practices. Dr. Matthew Clark is the Safety and Monitoring Team Lead of the IHS COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force.
Early in the pandemic, the risk of both infection and severe illness from COVID was highest in the elderly population and those with at-risk conditions. As time has passed and as more older folks have been vaccinated, really what we're seeing is more infection among our younger folks in the communities that we serve. We also know that while not terribly common, children can not only get infected, but they can have serious complications from infection. There's an important point regarding protecting children from serious infections, certainly those who are at higher risk. But then there's also the point of trying to protect other members, vulnerable members of the community from infection that can be spread from children.
Dr. Clark says parents and adolescents who have questions and concerns should talk to their doctor and access information about the vaccine.
The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was the first COVID vaccine to be authorized by the FDA for use in the United States, dating back to December. We now have about 5 to 6 months worth of both effectiveness and safety data regarding this vaccine, and we know that it is both highly effective and safe for use. We now know that it is equally effective and safe for use in persons aged 12 to 15. Specifically, when comparing the group of 12 to 15-year-olds who are vaccinated with the placebo group, the group that were not vaccinated in clinical trials, there was 100% effectiveness at preventing severe infection.
The Navajo Area IHS immediately started to vaccinate ages 12 and up following IHS approval. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez, in a virtual town hall last week, made the announcement, then took his 13-year-old son to get the vaccine at a site in Gallup, New Mexico.
As always, we try to walk the talk, right? If we're encouraging our parents to get their children vaccinated, you know, we're doing the same.
Navajo Area IHS officials say vaccinating 12 and up is a significant step in the fight against COVID-19. According to the IHS, the agency has ample supply of Pfizer vaccine and will work with IHS area offices, federal, tribal, and urban sites for distribution. The Department of the Interior has initiated next steps in a land allotment program for Alaska Native Vietnam veterans. The agency announced last week it's beginning tribal consultations, reviewing previous plans, and will expedite and process applications. Under the program, eligible individuals have the opportunity to select an allotment of up to 160 acres of federally managed land for veterans who did not have access to land allotments while serving during the Vietnam War. Alaska's governor recently announced a proposal that would allow the veterans to exchange their federal allotments for state land. The state proposal is said to be land that is generally closer to home than what they would receive through the federal program. Veterans who joined the governor for the state's announcement said they faced obstacles in participating in the federal program, including trying to overcome trauma when they returned home. Federal lands are available for selection through December 2025. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for nearly 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, coming to you live from my homelands of Shirhwitdui. Hauling water from town and buying water at the store are part of everyday life for a number of Native Americans. Many homes are not connected to a regular water source. A report by the nonprofit group Dig Deep finds Native Americans are 19 times more likely to live without indoor plumbing compared to their white counterparts. Dig Deep, along with numerous Native and non-Native nonprofit groups and federal entities, have been working on water infrastructure projects across our Native nations, but the problem persists. A new report from the Water and Tribes Initiative, which focuses on tribes in the Colorado River Basin, highlights the need for all of these entities to work collaboratively. And one potential source for progress is U.S. President Joe Biden's plan to allocate $111 million to water infrastructures across the country. A large part of that is aimed at water infrastructure for Native nations. And we'll hear from folks who work in water and we'll hear more about the need for effective and sustainable water infrastructure projects. And you can join our conversation too. Are you currently living without clean running water? What would you like to see change? Give us a call. We are at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today at Rockville, Maryland, is Jillian Curtis, and she is the Chief Financial Officer for the Indian Health Service. It's our pleasure to have her here with us today. Jillian, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you so much for having me today.
And Jillian, thank you for being here. And, you know, things that are in the headlines, the American Jobs Plan. Talk to me a little bit more about what it comprises of in terms of helping out with water infrastructure and where things currently stand. Any thoughts?
Absolutely. One of the core tenets of the American Jobs Plan is addressing access to potable water, wastewater treatment, and solid waste treatment systems across the country, and of course, specifically in American Indian and Alaska Native communities. The American Jobs Plan includes tens of billions of dollars for American Indian and Alaska Native communities, but even more specifically, there are significant resources included to address these critical water issues that have been these historic and longstanding challenges to Indian country, but have been especially highlighted during the COVID-19 pandemic.
And what have been some of the efforts to bring clean water to Native nations or beef up water systems? And if any previous relief packages have provided for that, tell me more.
Absolutely. There have been several efforts and ongoing efforts by the IHS during the pandemic to address this critical and urgent issue. We did receive some resources in the CARES Act, $10 million to support sanitation facilities construction type programs that would have specific impacts on COVID-19 response. So those dollars have been allocated across IHS tribal communities, IHS and tribal health programs, and we are currently in the process of supporting a significant number of projects, and tribal governments are also implementing a number of those projects across the country as well. I think a key element here, and I know that we'll hear more from the Navajo Nation perspective a little bit later, is that there are a significant number of homes in the nation that do not have access to a piped water supply. So we have really focused our efforts and over $5 million and 9 deployed teams to significantly increase and improve clean water access points across the nation.
And so, Jillian, describe a little bit about the role IHS plays in bringing water to our Native communities and just even partaking in water infrastructure.
Absolutely. So the IHS works with all federally recognized tribes on a government-to-government basis to help ensure tribal homes and communities have access to the water, wastewater, and solid waste infrastructure that they need. And we do that through the Sanitation Facilities Construction Program and in partnership with other federal agencies who also receive resources for these types of projects. We maintain what's called the Sanitation Deficiency System, which identifies currently 1,600 projects serving over 230,000 American Indian Alaska Native homes that are in need of improvements or expanded access to potable water and water treatment. So we really lead the effort in Indian country in identifying, helping to analyze, and then fund those projects when the resources are available. We receive about $250 million in our annual appropriation for these activities. And as I noted, we're starting to see some supplemental resources come our way, both through the CARES Act and now through the American Rescue Plan Act as well.
And what are some of the major projects or areas where, if more dollars come, that they may be allocated for? Maybe projects that have just been waiting for funding. Once it's there, it's a go. Is there anything like that you can report on?
Absolutely. We have about 600 projects that we would consider ready to fund once the resources come to fruition. Those projects are stretched across all 12 IHS areas, across the full scope of the country. And they would really, if those resources became available, it would really revolutionize the way that that these communities access clean water and sanitation facilities needs. We do estimate that those 600 ready-to-fund projects would serve nearly 93,000 eligible American Indian and Alaska Native homes.
And is there anything different that takes place with Alaska and Alaska Natives needing improvements to their water systems? Is there anything extra or different that happens?
Certainly. The Alaska area, of course, has unique geographical differences from the rest of the country and even within the state. So we often see that those projects are more challenging to complete or more expensive to complete. But we actually divide the Alaska area up into sort of three separate geographic regions, which we use to determine the economic feasibility of individual projects. So we really try to get to a localized estimate of economically feasible projects in the state of Alaska, just given the significant geographic differences across their three regions. So there are very unique issues. If issues can be unique and very unique, that's what you'll find in the Alaska area. Support the ANTC, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, who often carries out sanitation facilities construction projects directly on behalf of the IHS.
Well, thank you for that overview. And if you have any thoughts for Jillian, dial in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also here, too, out of Fort Defiance, Arizona, is Bita Becker, and she's an attorney with the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority. Our pleasure to have her here with us. She is a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Bita, welcome.
Thank you, Tara, so much.
And Bita, we want to know kind of how things work. We heard a national overview and just want to know a little bit more about water infrastructure.
how things work directly there on the Navajo Nation. We got a couple of minutes before break, so give us some more insight. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. So there are several different layers that happen at the Navajo Nation. If I start big picture, people may remember that the Navajo Nation entered into a settlement for its water rights in to the Colorado River Basin, specifically the San Juan River Basin. So let me restate that. The nation entered into a settlement for its San Juan River rights that's considered part of the Colorado River Basin. And that's the San Juan River located in New Mexico. So lots of detail here. When that settlement was entered into, Congress authorized the construction and authorized funding for what's called the Navajo Gallup Water Supply Project. That is a...
Okay, looks like we lost her, but we'll get her back. But again, we are asking today, when it comes to water resources in your tribal nation, what are your thoughts? What is the current state of water in your tribal nation? What about clean water? You can give us a ring. We look forward to hearing from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we're going to spend a little time in the Navajo Nation hearing a little bit about how things are set up. Also, research that's being done on all of this. And then we'll also be bringing you to Alaska to hear more. But again, there are things that you can add to this conversation. Many times we think about water as being a sacred entity in our Native nations, in our traditions, in our lives. And then when we think about bringing it to individuals, bringing it to individual homes, what are some of the considerations that need to be done? And we know that there have been relief funds that have come to our different Native nations because of what's going on with the pandemic. A lot of things were highlighted, especially where deficiencies were. Money came in. Did your tribe decide to use some of it to work on some of the water infrastructure, especially understanding how important and vital water is to even fighting against the pandemic? You can join us. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And is there access to water in your home? If not, what are you doing? And what do you hope your tribe will do to change things? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And of course, what kind of things need to change? We're ready for you. Phone lines are open. The largest chunk of money ever distributed to tribes from Congress is already going out. Just over $31 billion in coronavirus relief money is earmarked for tribes and tribal programs. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with tribal leaders and experts about the benefits and drawbacks of the current relief package.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesota Pueblo, and we are talking about water infrastructure in our Native nations. If you have any thoughts, we hope you will give us a ring right now, 1-800-996-2848. And President Joe Biden's plan could mean millions of dollars for tribes to address long-standing water access issues. You can join the conversation again by giving us a ring, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we go back to Fort Defiance, Arizona. With us today is Bita Becker. She is an attorney at the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority and also the co-lead of the Water in Tribes Initiative in the Colorado River Basin's Universal Access to Clean Water effort. Our pleasure to have her here. Bita, I'm just going to give it back to you and just further continue to explain water infrastructure on the Navajo Nation.
Yeah, thanks, Taryn. Sorry about, I don't know how I got cut off. So I'm not quite sure where I got cut off, but let me just quickly recap. So I want to talk a little bit about the Navajo Gallup Water Supply Project, which is one example of getting clean drinking water to people. That was authorized by Congress after the Navajo Nation settled its water rights to the San Juan River Basin in New Mexico, and that's all part of the considered part of the Colorado River Basin. That has two laterals, trunks. Let's think of it as trunks of pipeline delivering water to the Navajo Nation. The first one is called the Cutter Lateral, along, and it roughly follows State Highway 550, and that began delivering San Juan River water last year, and it's delivering water now. Very exciting. It's a new water supply, a surface water supply. The second lateral is being constructed along, roughly along Highway 491, and that construction, it's a much bigger lateral, a bigger supply. It's being built into Arizona, into Fort Defiance and Window Rock area, and will also be serving Gallup, as the name suggests. So that's a big project being largely managed by the Bureau of Reclamation, and it provides water for both homes, but in addition to homes, it's water that can be used for businesses like car washes and laundromats. It can also provide water for industrial sites like an Intel plant or, you know, a glove factory, those types of things. So then the next level, or a different level, I would say, is water to people's homes. So as was eloquently described earlier, IHS is primarily responsible for developing systems that deliver water to people's homes. After they construct them, there is a long-standing process whereby those systems then get transferred over to the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority to operate and maintain. And then I want to highlight a third area that is relatively new, and that is Navajo Tribal Utility Authority also helping to build water lines to people's homes. And I want to underscore what our IHS representative said earlier, which is if the funding, if billions of dollars is included, it does come forward potentially through the American Jobs Plan, it will revolutionize how getting infrastructure built to Indian people. The funding has been a challenge in the past. And the reason I'm drawing a connection to funding is last year, during 2020, when Congress passed what's called the CARES Act, Congress provided funding directly to tribes who could decide how to allocate that money. The Navajo Nation decided to allocate money to NTUA, Navajo Tribal Utility Authority. We connected over 700 homes to the electric grid. Many families, you know, for the first time having electricity. In addition, we connected 30 homes to water lines, and we were able to do that because of the CARES Act funding. It's not an area that we would normally be involved in at that level. In addition to building water lines, numerous homes were connected to cisterns as well. And two more things I want to highlight is when we think about clean drinking water going to homes, we always have to think about water in, water out. So that means we have to have a way of disposing of the water, the used water. Oftentimes we refer to that as sewer, but sometimes a septic system needs to be developed. So for the 30 lines that NTUA was able to construct with CARES Act funding, NTUA also constructed a septic system. I just want to reemphasize that if the funding comes, this will revolutionize. And I think a lot of people have heard about the American Rescue Plan. Similar to the CARES Act, Congress is providing funding directly to tribes, and that money has not been released yet. It will be released by the Department of the Treasury, but tribes will then have to go through the same process of deciding how to allocate it. And we are hopeful that the Navajo Nation will again allocate funding to help build out all the necessary utilities that are needed to function fully in today's modern society.
And, you know, Bita, 30 units, that's a lot to celebrate, and some of the other figures that you shared, but how much more is the need? How many other homes need these kind of services that potentially some of this funding could help?
So that NTUA has an estimate of approximately 15,000 homes. And I do want to also mention is right now, if there are Navajo people interested in seeing if NTUA could potentially build a water line to their home, they should go to their NTUA district office. The caveat is NTUA is constructing water lines that are very close to an existing water line. It's about 1,250 feet or less. And there's a bunch of technical reasons as to why the home has to be that close to the water line. But like I said, it's approximately, we estimate 15,000. The numbers are challenging to get at because there is no, to the best of our knowledge, except for the census through the American Community Plan, it's hard to get an exact census of exactly who's living where, in what type of structure, and whether or not they need electricity, water, and broadband. And I think it's a challenge because people move. And one of the things, anecdotally, I experienced during the pandemic was people saying, I want to come home. I want to spend the pandemic at home. You know, I don't want to be in Phoenix. I need to be close to my family. So, you know, people move. And so mobile homes move in and out. New structures get built. So it can be challenging to get an accurate number on how many homes need to be served.
And Batel, anything you can share about access to water historically and maybe even cultural ties where not having access to it is just a way of living too? I think we got to explain a little bit of that too, where, you know, it isn't just a bad thing. You know, anything there you want to open up? Go ahead.
Yeah, so if I understand the question, I think the question is, you know, historically, you know, we've been here from time immemorial, and so we were living without piped water to home, which is very much a true statement. People were living off of springs or washes for a long time, and where my mom grew up, they lived off of was a spring. The connection to health, though, needs to be underscored. So a couple of things. Water may be contaminated that people have been obtaining. And on the Navajo Nation, there's many different reasons. They can be naturally occurring contaminants, or they can be contaminants that were exposed from, for instance, uranium mining is the biggest example of that. And over time, with development and that sort of thing, water sources can become contaminated. So, yes, there are absolutely, historically, people have been able to drink water directly from a spring, and I keep going back to a spring because I always think of my mom. Over time, that sort of life becomes more and more challenging because it takes a lot of time and effort to go collect those water sources, right? Before industrialization, much of our time as human beings were spent towards doing those things we needed to do to survive. After industrialization, people have jobs that they have to get to, schools they need to get to, all those sorts of things. And so it's challenging, if not nearly impossible, to live that life because of the time and effort it takes to get water from natural sources.
Sure, and even thinking about resources to get to those sources takes gas, and you know, you're hauling water. A lot to consider. Maybe there's something you would like to share with us. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Bita, I also want to get your perspective on the Water in Tribes Initiative report toward a sense of the basin. Anything you want to share from it, or maybe how it provides more knowledge on what we're talking about today?
Yeah, thanks for that, Tara. And I do want to also underscore your point about hauling water is incredibly expensive. It is considered the most expensive water because of the time, the energy, the gas, everything that you've explained. So the Water and Tribes Initiative began in 2017 through Professor Matt McKinney and Daryl V. Hill of the Hickory Apache Nation. And their goal is to raise the voice of tribes in the Colorado River, and specifically regarding something called the 2007 Interim Guidelines. And those are guidelines that have to do with the operations of Lake Mead and Lake Powell, the two big storage units that regulate water availability between the upper and lower basin. And then in 2020, the pandemic hit. And as was discussed earlier, the pandemic shined a light on the need, literally life or death need for water. There is no coincidence that the highest rate of death from COVID-19 among any racial or ethnic group is occurring among Alaska Natives and American Indians in the lower 48. There's no coincidence between that and the lack of access to clean drinking water. There was a report done early in the pandemic by a coalition of professors who found a statistical significance between the lack of access to clean water, indoor plumbing as well, and the high rates of COVID-19. So we began this initiative because my co-lead, her name is Ann Castle, and I were hearing from a lot of people who weren't aware. They were not aware that American citizens were living without access to clean drinking water. And while the focus is often on the lack of piped water, what our researchers have found is that lack of access comes in four different forms. One is lack of piped water. Another is aging infrastructure, right? And that's, I think, a common problem throughout Indian country, and I can imagine a lot of people are nodding their heads up and down. Yes, we heard from one tribe, the Warm Springs Tribe in Oregon, who reported that their system is still made of wood and clay pipes, and it breaks down continuously. Another form of lack of access is water quality. We heard from the Hopi tribe, whose system pulls from an arsenic-laden aquifer. So they need assistance making sure that their water meets modern water quality standards. And the last bucket is assistance with operations and maintenance. So I want to kind of underscore that, because when Congress created the Indian Health Service Sanitation Deficiency Program back in the 1950s, and I'm getting very technical here, they authorized IHS to support operations and maintenance costs for Indian tribes, meaning once a system's built, you got to keep it up and running. You got to make sure it's treating water to the current water quality standards. Well, that all takes money, right? And tribes don't generally have the ability to tax their lands and earn income to run such systems. Well, IHS recognized the need to assist tribes in operating, maintaining their systems. What's interesting is that authorization has never been funded. So I want to go back to, again, keep reiterating that if the funding becomes available, which I'm very hopeful and optimistic that it will be, it will revolutionize access to water. And last thing, Tara, I don't want to dominate the conversation, is, you know, there are 30 tribes in the Colorado River Basin, and there are researchers, and you have one on the phone, so I'll let her get into more detail. But they did find numerous tribes other than Navajo lack access to piped water, and found that all tribes fall into one of these four buckets. All tribes have challenges with access to clean drinking water.
And we know you have some comments on this too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And you know what? We're going to meet one of these researchers. Heather Tanana is with us. She's a research professor at Stegner Center Fellow at the University of Utah Law School. And she is also a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Heather, coming up after the break, I would love for you to share details on some of the things that you have researched. But just thinking about how important water is, why do we really need to think about the way people access water in our Native nations? And you got a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, I think, and thanks for having me on, but, you know, when we started this work, we really premised it on the basis that right to water is a human fundamental right because of this connection with health. You know, waterborne illnesses were very prevalent. That's why the sanitation division was started under Indian Health Services, and we saw progress in other parts of the United States. People weren't, you know, contracting cholera or dysentery from their water systems, but that did not happen in our tribal communities. So, yeah, happy to talk more in depth about that on the break and what we found in the different areas.
All right, that'll be coming up right after we pause here for a moment. But now is the time. If you want to join us, dial in. There is plenty I know that you're thinking after hearing our different speakers. Go ahead, call in. You can ask your questions too. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. Give us a picture of how things are in terms of accessing water in your tribal community. We look forward to hearing from you again. We'll keep these phone lines open. So go ahead, dial now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And you can also post your thoughts on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. We're on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And of course, you can find us too on Facebook as well as Instagram. All right, we're ready for you. Go ahead, dial in. We got more ahead right here on Native America Calling.
As COVID-19 vaccines are becoming available, Americans are eager to learn more, but frustrated about where to find answers. That's why AARP is working to protect Americans 50-plus by connecting you to the latest information. You can learn who's eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine in your state, when, where, and how to get it, and what you might want to discuss with your doctor at aarp.org/vaccineinfo. AARP supports this program.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about creating and improving drinking water infrastructure for all of our Native communities, and what kind of work is your tribe doing to create access to safe drinking water for everyone. There is still time to join the conversation, but you got to dial now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We go back to Heather Tanana, who joins us out of Utah, a research professor and Stegner Fellow at the University of Utah Law School. She's a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Welcome back, Heather, and please take us to the research you've done and some of the findings.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Tara. So, you know, I think Bitta really highlighted the four takeaways we had looking into what does it mean to have universal, clean water access. You know, what do tribal communities and really any community need to have water security? And there had been prior research, you know, cited to the DIG, U.S. Water Alliance finding connecting lack of piped water with really being increased in Native Americans, race being the number one factor determining whether a home had piped water coming in. But we took as we started diving into it, we discovered that this challenge of securing water was multifaceted. And again, Bitta ran through those four different components briefly. That certainly it includes the actual piped water coming into a home, but beyond that, you have to have clean water to be able to utilize it. The quality has to be a certain level, and that a lot of tribal communities across the U.S. Do not have clean water. They're consuming water that is harmful to their health, you know, not just the arsenic that the Hopi tribe's encountering, but the uranium mining that's prevalent in Navajo, Arizona, or it was actually New Mexico did a study finding uranium in the blood of newborns, right? That's getting into mothers and their children's systems through the foods, through the water that they're consuming and being down on that land. And then, beyond the Colorado River Basin, you know, I think these problems are also in other areas. We'll hear about Alaska later. But you know, the Crow Indian Reservation, they also were dealing with water challenges up there, you know, but because of the limited resources, many of the communities on the Crow Reservation were using the water with high levels of iron sulfate, things that maybe immediately might not have an impact on the health, but certainly long term it will lead to negative outcomes, you know, whether it's cancers or other health challenges. And then the third and fourth buckets, just to briefly recap, you know, the third is you have these water systems put in place. Maybe right now your quality is okay, but a lot of our tribal communities were young, growing population, and the existing infrastructure is not sufficient to meet the growing demands of these communities. Or they were put in the late 1800s and are deteriorating, and they need replacement that costs money. Across the U.S., our water infrastructure is severely lacking. That's no exception in Indian country. And IHS has actually found, you know, every dollar spent on sanitation facilities in tribal areas has at least a 20-fold return in health benefits. And then finally, the last area is, again, but I talked about this briefly, but operation and maintenance, we kind of referred to as O&M, that, you know, the best newest system could be put in place, but unless that community has the capacity and the resources to manage that system, it's going to fall into disrepair, which leads to those other challenges before, right? Water can get stagnant, and then the quality decreases, or it breaks, and then it's not bringing water into homes. So those were the four areas that we looked at and found, again, feeling very confident that we can say every tribal community is dealing with at least one of those challenges. They don't have quality issues, or maybe most of their homes do have pipe water, they are having difficulties getting O&M. And again, IHS is the only agency that's authorized to provide that support, but it hasn't been funded. And so it's been a challenge for tribes to get the resources, get the capacity to be able to operate and maintain those systems on their own.
And Heather, people want to follow your work or some of the findings, where do they find it?
Yeah, we have our full report, and an executive summary is online. If you go to the Water and Tribes Initiative site, and honestly, if you just Google that, Water and Tribes Initiative, it take you to www.naturalresourcespolicy.org. You can go to this specific initiative, and it has our report, also just some other kind of fact sheets, a webinar we put on, a lot of information you can find online.
Well, thank you for that, and maybe that's some useful information for you. If you missed any of that, you can find this program in our archives at NativeAmericaCalling.com. Also here today, out of Fairbanks, Alaska, is Jackie Schaefer. She is a Community Development Manager for Community Environment and Health with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and she is Inupiaq from Kotzebue. Our pleasure to have her here with us today. And Jackie, give us a view of exactly what Alaska Natives there in Alaska are facing, especially wanting to see better water infrastructure, things that have come up because of the pandemic, lessons learned, or maybe even finally some funding. Anything you want to share, go ahead.
Thank you, Kriana, for having me on. I'd first like to acknowledge the Alaska lands that I'm are not my traditional lands that I'm on. In Fairbanks are the Dene people of the lower Tanana River, so I acknowledge their ancestral lands. And yes, Alaska is unique in a lot of different aspects. We are a very large state. We, you know, span from the East Coast to the West Coast of America. And so, and you know, we are logistically challenged. Our rural communities, most are off-road systems, so we have to use aircrafts, both large and small, to get to these communities. So the infrastructure, just like I'll reiterate what everyone else is saying, the infrastructure is aging and it's beyond its life cycle. So replacing infrastructure is very expensive. In Alaska, we still have over 3,200 homes and 32 communities that lack piped infrastructure, $1.8 billion difference in available funding needs versus the needs. And so, and with that comes lots of challenges just on daily life. So you add a pandemic to it and you shut things down and say the community, Washateria, which contains the laundry facilities as well as the bathing facilities for the entire community is shut down due to a pandemic. Now you've created another disparity to those homes. A lot of our homes are overcrowded, so we have multiple generations living in these homes. The homes themselves, a lot of them are, again, beyond their age life cycle in a normal Western setting. And so you have compounding issues that we face every day.
And so thinking about, you know, how all of this connects, and of course, you know, it affects the individual home. And thinking of these aging homes and what's being done to prepare for major repairs or just always waiting till something breaks and then, you know, putting people out of their home to get some of these things fixed. And then even thinking about doing some of that in the middle of a pandemic where people are told, don't mix households. A lot of complications. And is there anything, Jackie, that you really think listeners ought to know about how challenging it does get and maybe even things that you hope happen to switch things around? Anything you want to share?
Yeah, you know, I like to look at the optimistic side of things. You know, our people, I think partially because of the logistic challenges, we've been able to keep our lifestyles, our traditional lifestyles intact. We still harvest off the land, air, and sea. And so traditional foods and traditional medicinal plants became a big part of local communities' response to COVID. And when it comes to aging infrastructure and when things break, you don't, in the Arctic, you don't get to go move somewhere else. There is nowhere else to move. So basically, you move in with a relative. And so that piece of it becomes, you know, that I would say that challenge of housing, public health, and water infrastructure, you know, we have to start looking at it through a holistic lens. Those funding flows are avenues that come in very siloed funding flows, and they can't touch each other. You know, federal funding can't touch each other. So that challenge, I think we have to start looking at ways to look at the funding, excuse me, and take a more holistic approach and find ways for that funding avenue to go side by side, but still help in a more holistic manner. So the positives are we had communities that banded together to, since, you know, aircrafts were only coming in once a day versus three times a day, food supply became a challenge as well. And then your water supply, if it's at the watering point and that person got sick, that watering point had very limited access. So, but on the positive side, some communities banded together to have water groups go out and get fresh water from watering points and deliver it to homes, as well as food resources, using subsistence lifestyle to go out and hunt as a community versus individually, and then distribute that food to households. So, you know, in communities that lack water and sanitation infrastructure, you know, the transmission of viruses such as COVID is, you know, you need to wash your hands frequently. But if you don't have access to running water, you're self-hauling this water to your home and then using a wash basin. That wash basin becomes a transmission point. And so our response had to be looking at the lifestyles of people and meeting them where they were at. You know, the one flight a day then prohibited travel from hub communities to come into communities that had issues with their water systems. And so parts were harder to get supply lines into the community, and it was harder to get hygiene products such as hand sanitizer into the home. So our response had to be very unique to Alaska. So I think, though, the lessons learned was in any situation, those challenges could be overcome. And I'm happy to say that now with the vaccination response, those very communities that had the biggest challenges are 100% vaccinated. So so there's pros and cons to every situation.
Indeed, and a lot to learn in between those. And also want to get your take, Jackie, on the President's American Jobs Plan and hopes of it bringing more funding to face some of these issues with water infrastructure.
Yes. So when we hear that there's going to be an influx of funding for water and sanitation, you know, of course, we're very excited. Indian Health Service knows the challenges of building infrastructure in the Arctic. Our temperatures in some of the communities, one of the communities I'm going to today, it's, you know, it gets to minus 70 below in the wintertime and then 120 degrees above zero in the summertime. So when you have such a broad variance in temperature, your engineering has to be unique for that climate. So I always say we're engineering for the moon, but we have to somehow make it affordable for the people on Earth, right? So I am very excited that this influx is coming, and it also opens a lot of opportunities for our engineers to look at maybe there are ways to address the issues in a different perspective. As far as the jobs themselves, these communities are small. The average community size is 450 to 500 people, and so the jobs for water infrastructure are minimal. The infrastructure itself is very expensive. The average cost for pipe, water, and sewer in these communities is $40 to $50 million. So making it affordable once the infrastructure is in place for people to sustain that is another challenge. So that's an economic challenge.
And so wanting to just highlight some more of the positive, any more success stories coming from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium on bringing better water projects, getting people better access to water, or even beefing up the way sanitation is handled? Anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah. So the exciting piece is that even through the pandemic, we were able to bring first-time service to some communities, working with multiple agencies, community partners, and regional partners, our regional health organizations, and also filling a gap where some of those communities don't have the opportunity for that influx of funding to come for the pipe infrastructure. We have a project called the Portable Alternative Sanitation System, and that is kind of an in-between temporary in-home system that allows storage of potable water and a discharge seepage pit for the waste side. The CDC Foundation also funded 100 units for a mini PASS system. PASS is the acronym for that Portable Alternative Sanitation System. And those mini PASS systems are going into 10 different communities. They basically consist of a hand washing station and a vented honey bucket. So most of these unserved communities either have outhouses or they have 5-gallon buckets in their homes that they use for their human waste, and then they haul it out every day. And so the homes lack adequate ventilation. A lot of it is designed to environment, but a lot of it is also they've aged past their life cycle, and so the homes don't have adequate ventilation. And so the vented honey bucket allows a little bit of circulation within the air, but it also changes how you try to mask the smell in that bucket of human waste, which normally is chemicals, Lysol, Pine-Sol, et cetera. And with the vented honey bucket, you no longer are using those harmful chemicals to mask the smell because there is no longer a smell. So there are some successes. The distribution of sanitizer, hand sanitizer across the state was another wonderful success story. It took multiple partners. So I think in times like this, if anything, it showed that Alaska is unique to meet the needs of people where they're at, as well as collaborate. And the Alaska Native Tribal Health Association
is so much. Right. And you know what, Jackie, we got to wrap things up. Thank you for being with us. We'll meet you here tomorrow. Thank you to everybody that we heard from. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling.
Support by Western Governors University, an online university for working adults and underserved populations. At WGU, students apply what they already know, learn at their own pace, and graduate sooner, with little or no debt. With bachelor's and master's degree programs in four fields, business, IT, teaching, and health professions, including nursing. Information and application at wgu.edu/degrees.
We took a learning, healthcare coverage make a yominasi. Kahula yominasi, local Indian healthcare provider. Kaisakangwafsi tulu healthcare.gov, nakakila lugu, kahula lui, 1-800-318-2596. Unakai luni, sentamin, Medicare and Medicaid service kunin.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.